So thank you very much, and thank you to the organizers for inviting me to give this talk today. I'll be discussing two experiments that are part of a comprehensive program in searching for neutrinoless double beta decay in fluorine-130. They were both mentioned in the previous talk. So I think the previous talks have nicely summarized the motivation and background for searching for neutrinoless double beta decay, so I'll jump right into the basics of CORE. CORE is an acronym for the Cryogenic Underground Observatory for Rare Events. It's an upcoming experiment that will consist of a large array, 988 tellurium dioxide crystals, each being 5 cubic centimeters, and they'll be operated as cryogenic bolometers, and the primary goal is to search for neutrinoless double beta decay in tellurium-130. So, as Boris mentioned, this is part of CORE is the latest evolution in a long program that's been existing for many years in searching for neutrinoless double beta decay in tellurium-130. The last one that was completed was CORECINO. This operated from 2003 to 2008 and is now complete, has published its final results. And we are now currently at the stage where we are operating CORE0, which is a single tower of tellurium dioxide crystals that's basically an improved version of CORECINO. And while we're operating CORE0, we're constructing the CORE detector, which is basically identical to CORE0, but multiplied by 19 times. So the principles in searching for neutrinoless double beta decay in bolometers are very, very simple. Basically, you have a crystal, tellurium dioxide, and it functions as both the source of the decay isotope and the detector of any events. So in this case, it's tellurium-130, and if there's an event inside it, the crystal operates as a calorimeter, and you can see very small particle interactions inside it. So just to illustrate that in a little more detail, when you cool these crystals down to cryogenic temperatures, in our case to 10 millikelvin, single particle interactions inside them, where you get a small energy deposition, will produce measurable rises in the crystal's temperature. And if you instrument these crystals with thermistors, what you see are pulses, temperature pulses that look something like this. So this is the initial deposition of energy, temperature of the crystal rises, and then as the phonons dissipate back into the cold bath, you see the pulse decay away back to the baseline. And the critical thing to take away from these this pulse plot is that the energy that's deposited in the crystal is proportional to the amplitude of that pulse. So then what you do in principle is, again, very simple. You just compile the energy spectrum of those pulses, and what you're looking for is a small peak in the background spectrum at the Q value of the double beta decay. In this case, for tellurium-130, that corresponds to 25-27 keV. So all these experiments in the CORE program are carried out at the Gran Sasso National Lab in Italy. This is an underground lab underneath the highest mountain in the Apennines, and it's built off of a highway tunnel, which is nice because it has horizontal access. And it consists of three large experimental halls labeled A, B, and C here. And I'm sure many of you are familiar with LNGS, but if you've never been there, it's really a quite an impressive facility. This is Hall B after its construction, and for scale, you can see this is a person walking in the hall. So it's really a fantastic facility for doing underground physics. So CORE has two facilities in Hall A. On the right is the hut that hosted CORECINO and now hosts CORE0. And on the left here is the CORE hut where CORE is currently under construction. So going into the past a little bit with CORECINO to motivate some of the current work we're doing in CORE, this is the energy spectrum of events from the detector. And you can basically divide the spectrum into two regions. On the left is the gamma region, ending around the thallium 208 peak at a 2615. And on the right is the alpha region, which is dominated by these alpha peaks, and then there's sort of a degraded alpha continuum underlying it all. And the Q value for tellurium 130 is, again, at 25, 27 kV, which is just at the end of the gamma region, just below the thallium 208 peak. So what was found in Coroccino is that there are three main sources of background in the region of interest around the Q value. Roughly a third of the background came from multi-scatter Compton gammas from thallium 208, which originated from thorium 232 in the cryostat. And roughly the other two-thirds came from alpha decays on the copper and crystal surfaces, so on the detector itself. And this was the result. So this is the background spectrum in the region of interest. There's a small peak from cobalt 60. This is produced by cosmogenic activation of the copper, so that's always present to some extent. And what was looked for was, again, this evidence of a peak above the background at 25, 27 kV. And as you can see, the best fit here, plotted in blue, actually dips down slightly, and these are various confidence level intervals for ruling out a downward fluctuation that would have hidden a signal. And so basically what you can take away from this is that from Coroccino there is no evidence for neutrinoless double beta decay in tellurium 130, and that leads to some limits, of course, on the half-life and the Majorana neutrino mass. So the next step then was CORE. This is a large collaboration that's primarily U.S. and Italian institutions, much like Coroccino was, with some other institutions from China, France, and Spain. And CORE is basically a scaled-up version of Coroccino, but in this case, we're building an entirely new dedicated cryostat and refrigeration apparatus. So the CORE detector is like a Russian nested doll. On the outside, there are polyethylene and lead shields. Then you have a series of six concentric cryostat shields going down in temperature to the base temperature of 10 millikelvin. There's some internal lead shielding. And then finally, you have the detector array itself, which is 19 towers, and each tower has 52 tellurium dioxide crystals. And this is all cooled down by a combination of pulse tubes and a dilution refrigerator. So really, the Coroccino nicely demonstrated that this sort of experiment works and is possible. And at this point, it really becomes an engineering challenge to both scale up the bolometric apparatus by almost 20 times, while at the same time reducing the backgrounds. As you heard in the previous talks, in these neutrinoless double beta decay searches, it really becomes a game of trying to push down the backgrounds as much as possible to reveal any peak that might be there. And you can get a sense from this CAD drawing of the detector just how intricate and complicated operating a cryostat like this is going to be. So as far as the improvements to the detector itself, it's obviously larger. It's almost 20 times larger. It's much cleaner. Both the crystals and the copper frames that are used to hold the crystals are cleaner. The environment in which the detectors are built is cleaner. They're always kept under nitrogen atmosphere and built inside glove boxes. And also the readout wiring is much more robust and an improvement on the previous system. So this is a table just comparing the masses and the expected backgrounds. This is the background from Coroccino and the background we see now in CORE Zero. The target for CORE is one count per kV kilogram year, which we think is quite feasible, as I'll get into in a second. There have been modest improvements in the energy resolution, but really the big gains are in the background and the mass of the isotope. So this is the hut. This is a cross-section of the hut in Hall A, where CORE is being built. The first floor is mainly infrastructural cryostat equipment with a lifting mechanism for the shields. The first floor is a clean room That's where we build the detectors, as I'll show you in a second. And then the top floor is basically the counting room and also where the suspension is located for the cryostat. So you can see here the outer shield is depicted, and it's hanging from the cryostat, which has posts, isolated posts to the base. So as I mentioned, the middle floor is a dedicated clean room, and all the crystals that go into the towers are prepared and assembled inside this clean room, and they're always kept under nitrogen atmosphere, and all the activity is done inside glove boxes. So what happens is the crystals first come into the gluing room. This is where their sensors are attached to them. Then they go into the assembly room where they're built into towers. Then they go into storage. And then ultimately, once the cryostat is ready, we'll install them inside the cryostat. So this is just a picture of the semi-automated glove box enclosed system for gluing sensors to the crystals. You can see a bank of crystals up here. These have already been glued. There are two crystals on these instruments here that are in the process of curing. And there are two robots. So this is an anthropomorphic arm that handles the crystals inside the glove box. And this is another robot that dispenses the glue very precisely so that we get exactly a repeatable sensor attachment to every crystal. Once the crystals are instrumented, they go to the tower assembly line. So all the crystals, all the towers are built using this workstation. So tower assembly line is maybe a little bit of a misnomer because the workstation stays in place and we basically keep the tower inside it while we affix a series of glove boxes on top for each stage of its assembly. So inside it's flux of nitrogen. There's a viewing window here so we can see inside. And just to walk you through the steps of the assembly, this is the first step where the instrumented crystals are being assembled into a tower. As each floor is completed, the tower descends down into the garage and continues on that way until all 13 floors are built. Here is a picture of the tower, constructed tower, waiting in the garage for the next step. Step two is wire bonding of the tower. So when we assemble the crystals into the tower, they're just freestanding. They're not connected to any readouts. So what we have to do is instrument wires between each sensor and these readout cables. And we do this using a wire bonding machine that's turned on its side. You can see here a pad where the wire bonding is being performed. And then once that's complete, we finally put some final touches on it, put it into a storage container, and then finally they go and sit against the wall and wait until time comes to put them inside the cryostat. So we achieved a big milestone this summer. We completed all 19 towers. I think if you count them, there should be 19 here. And they're all now sitting in nitrogen flux storage, waiting till the time comes for their installation. So having showed you the tower assembly, should back up a little bit and tell you about Quarry Zero. This was the very first tower that was built on the Quarry assembly line, and it serves two purposes. The first was to basically commission the assembly line. It was sort of a shakedown, make sure everything was working properly before we embarked on constructing all 19 towers. And also, it serves as a neutrinoless double beta decay experiment in its own right, in that it's operating and taking data and should surpass Coricino while Quarry is being built. And it first began data taking in the former Coricino cryostat in March 2013. So this is just a picture of Quarry Zero after it was built. You'll notice it's unlike the Quarry towers, it's not naked, it's inside a thermal shield, and that's because we attached it to the former Coricino dilution refrigerator here. And then, this is during the initial instrumentation stage, and then you can see there's some trap doors in the floor. What happens is those open up and we lower it down into the cryostat on the ground floor, and that's where it currently sits and is taking data. So Quarry Zero has been performing very well. There were initially 51 crystals. 51 out of the 52 crystals had thermistors, which are the readout resistors that we use to look at the temperature. All of those survive cool down. The one that doesn't exist is simply was not there at the beginning because it could not be bonded. And 49 out of 52 crystals have both an active thermistor and a heater. And the heater is the other sensor which we use to basically stabilize the gain of the crystals when they're inside the cryostat. So overall, it was a very, very nice efficiency survival of this this detector. This is a plot of the current CORE-Zero energy spectrum. So we collect two types of data, calibration data and background data. Background data is basically the true data taking where we don't have any sources inside. We're just looking for neutrinoless double beta decay. But about once a month, we perform calibrations where we lower thoriated tungsten wires in between the cryostat and the outer lead shield. And that gives you the spectrum in red here. And the calibration data serves a lot of purposes, but one of those is to evaluate the detector resolutions for each bolometer. So to do that, we look at the width of the thallium 208 peak at 2615 keV. And in the second phase of CORE-Zero running, where we had sort of tuned the cryostat to behave a little bit better, we actually achieved better than our sensitivity goal. The full width half max of the peak was 4.8 keV. Comparing CORE-Zero to CORE-Chino, you can see very obvious improvements. So in black here is CORE-Chino, the background event rate, and the red is CORE-Zero. And if you look at the two sources of background, the alphas and the gammas, you can see that in the region of interest, which is highlighted in green here, the background has been knocked down by a little bit more than a factor of two. And the alphas have been knocked down even more by almost a factor of six. So this factor of 2.5 reduction in the gammas is primarily due to less radon contamination. Unfortunately, we have some irreducible thorium-232 contamination in the cryostat, so we have sort of a floor on exactly how much gamma reduction we could get. But this actually is encouraging for a CORE because we shouldn't suffer from that limitation. And then for the alphas, we had this nearly six-fold reduction in the alpha background, which was extremely encouraging because it validated both the enhanced cleaning and the enhanced assembly techniques that a lot of people had spent a lot of time and effort in R&D and in implementing. It also confirms our background model, which was originally developed from CORE-Chino. And most of all, the biggest encouraging thing about this is that it really shows that the CORE sensitivity goal looks to be within reach. In analyzing the CORE-Zero data, we blind it to avoid biasing ourselves. And the way we do this is that we take a small fraction, a small and blinded fraction of events from the thallium 208 peak, and we move them down to around the Q value of the tellurium-130 decay. And we do the same thing with some values from some events from the Q value region, move them up to the 2615 peak. And so what that yields is this plot of the blinded CORE-Zero region of interest. So just to reiterate, this is not neutrinoless double beta decay. This is a salted peak, as it's called. Again, you can see the cobalt-60 peak here on the left. And our background, overall background in the region of interest is around 0.06 counts per keV kilogram year. As far as sensitivity, because of the slightly improved resolution and the better background, we're rapidly approaching the half-life limit from CORE-Chino. So this was our first data release in September of 2013. This is where we were at earlier this year in May. And we're closing in either by the end of this year or early next year, we hope to surpass the CORE-Zero limit. So to summarize the CORE-Zero story, it's been a hugely successful radio purity and resolution demonstrator. We're currently intensely performing data analysis with a lot of improvements that are still to be made in fine-tuning our resolution and stabilizing the data. Data taking will continue until next year. We haven't decided exactly when. It depends in part on how query goes, but we definitely intend to unblind and publish sometime next year. So meanwhile, while we're taking data with Query Zero and the former Coricino cryostat, we're also hard at work on Query. So one of the major efforts in recent months has been commissioning the cryostat. As I mentioned, this is a big and complicated detector, and or I should say apparatus that will host our detector. And so we're following this very careful phased integration plan to make sure that all the components will work in the final system. So what you see here are the six successive flanges for the six stages, temperature stages of the cryostat. In particular, we've performed two what we call no-load cooldowns. So these are cooldowns of the cryostat vessels without anything inside. In 2013, we did our first cooldown. That was to 4K, so that was the middle stage. It involved just the three outer vessels. And then just a couple months ago, we achieved a cooldown to base temperature with all the vessels and the dilution refrigerator installed inside the cryostat. So this was a huge milestone. I think after this, we're feeling very confident about the outlook, and we can sort of see the end in sight for data taking. It also leads me to a short feature, which I'll call Query in the News. After we achieved this base temperature cooldown, a graduate student at UC Berkeley, John Ouellette, posted a kind of fun paper at the archive where he presents a good argument that the detector region of the Query cryostat will represent the coldest cubic meter in the known universe. And this surprisingly got picked up by a blog. I guess they monitor the archive. And they wrote a pretty nice summary, a fairly accurate summary of the work we were doing. Unfortunately, they showed a picture of Query Zero rather than Query, but that's understandable. So when this happened, we recognized that there was a real potential for public interest, and so we issued some press releases where we provided some nice pictures and explained exactly what we were doing. But as many of you may know, there's a hard lesson that once you send out information into the world, it sort of takes on a life of its own. So these are a few headlines that arose. So Times of India said the lowest temperature ever in the universe was recorded in an Italian lab. That's not quite right. This website said it was the coldest object on Earth created in a lab, which is also not quite right. And this one is my favorite. So the Huffington Post said, scientists create coldest cubic meter in the universe, claim new world record. So, which is not wrong, but just misses the essential point, I think. So moving on to the experimental sensitivities. This is a plot of the half-life sensitivity as a function of live time for Coricino, Query Zero, and Query. In red is the limit from Coricino. And you can see that Query Zero, in almost a year of live time, given the improvements in mass and resolution, should surpass it. And then once Query comes online, because of the huge advantages in mass and anti-coincidence and those sorts of things, just almost immediately blows past the line from Coricino and approaches this limit here at the 90% confidence level.
Is zero where we are now?
No, so Query Zero is, well, it's hard to say exactly, but it's maybe around, 2 times 10, well, I shouldn't give the half-life number, but yeah, it's a few months away from Coricino limit as far as data taking. So this is the Majorana mass versus lightest mass plot. I don't think I have to explain this to you because previous presenters gave a very nice explanation of it. But just to show you where everybody sits and where Query sits, this is the germanium claim in germanium 76 from Klapdor. Coricino probed down into this. Most recently, Gerda probe kind of covered the Clapdoor claim. And then Camlanzen and EXO in conjunction have really probed further down if you combine their experimental results. And the ultimate goal for Aquarae will be to probe down to the upper part of the inverted mass hierarchy. Whenever the theorists revise the numbers for the nuclear matrix elements, we get a little bit nervous about where we'll end up here. But for the moment, we're still inside the inverted hierarchy band. And I certainly don't want to leave out that Catrin and cosmology, as was mentioned, are pushing from the right. So things are, will hopefully in the next couple of years be converging, and maybe we'll make an interesting discovery. So to summarize, tellurium dioxide bolometers have been demonstrated to offer a competitive technique in searching for neutrinoless double beta decay. Quarry is basically an evolution that builds on the success of Corachino, which did not see evidence of neutrinoless double beta decay in tellurium 130. Quarry Zero, this sort of demonstrator for Quarry, is now taking data, and it's been doing so since March 2013. It's already met and validated our sort of technical design goals, and we expect it to surpass Corachino soon in its science reach. As far as Quarry, we've achieved in the summer two big milestones. We assembled all 19 towers, so the towers detectors are now ready and waiting for the cryostat. And we are currently commissioning the cryogenic system and the experimental infrastructure for the experiment. And this has been going very well. The cryostat is following the phased implementation. And if all continues to go well, we expect to start data taking with Quarry in 2015. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions about Quarry?
So it's the Cryogenic Underground Observatory for Rare Events. That was my first slide there.
Okay, so I'll ask one, even though it's not on the double beta decay. So in principle, these detectors could do a double job, right? They could look for dark matter. Majorana certainly can if they were to lower their energy threshold enough. Do you have any prospects of that? I mean, do you have a lot of background that you cannot overcome? Is there work being done in that direction, or?
I should probably just say that there is work in that direction on pushing down our low energy threshold. Mm-hmm. Certainly there's interest in looking for axions, doing axion searches. Dark matter I'm not an expert on, but I think if we could push it down further, that might not be an impossibility. But it is an active area.
It's part of your portfolio, right?
Well, I think I don't want to say that's. I'd prefer just leave it as saying it's our primary objective is searching for neutrinoless double beta decay. Anything else would be gravy.
Okay.
On their background spectrum with the alphas.
Yep.
Yeah, this was, the other one.
This one.
Yeah, so it looked like, was that the polonium peak? Looks like it's stayed about the same between Corachino and Quarry Zero, but the other has decreased?
Yeah, so this is platinum 190, and this is...
I was more worried about the polonium peak up at 5.4.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I think most of our, I think
You don't know why that one stayed?
Both polonium and platinum, I know that's something that comes from the manufacturer of the crystals, so that decays away with time. As far as the polonium, yeah, I'm not sure exactly. I could give you a good answer. I could look into that.
And then what's the line at like 4100? Is that a gamma ray?
Yeah, that I don't know. I'd have to check. So yeah, most of it is...
Could you repeat the question? You have a mic.
Oh, sorry. How much of this is inside the materials and how much is on the surfaces? So the main concern are events that are on the, at least as far as the alpha continuum, are events that are on a surface and decay, and there's... they get degraded, and so they end up in the region of interest because they've left their energy in either the copper or another crystal. If it's another crystal, you can usually see it. So really the big fear is alpha contamination on the copper.
Other questions? Comments? Insights? Complaints? It's a long day. If not, let's thank the speaker again for telling us about this promising program. Reception is scheduled for 5:00. I don't know if they would be ready at this point.